Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Robin Scott drink an extremely limited production Gruner Veltliner from California, but from an acclaimed boutique producer, Carlisle, and their Steiner Vineyard Gruner Veltliner from Sonoma Mountain. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I'm joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
I'm smiling. We're drinking one of my favorite varietals in all the world, and for the first time, I'll be drinking an American producer.
American.
Gruner Veltliner.
Tucker Carlson would approve, although we're not drinking it yet, but still. On tonight's show, Scott...
Does he approve of anything?
He approves of green. He approves of bow ties.
Green? As in green?
Marjorie Taylor Green.
Oh.
Not the color green.
Or not green energy or a green building or he a also, green production method.
Scott, he also approves of a great many things at the Tamarack.
Does he?
He loves the teaser.
Does he love the teaser? I was going to ask.
But then he takes the whole fist. He's great, you know? Talked about that. Yeah.
Did he talk?
Tucky. That's what we call him. You know why?
I can't imagine why.
But that's what he does. The song, what? You ever seen Silence of the Lambs and Buffalo? Yeah. That's why we call him Tucky.
Oh.
Yeah. And you say, who's we? There's like 9 other fellows, and he dances for us, and, you know, yeah, that's what he does. That's why he likes it. I don't know.
What's he saying about his testimony? Is he going to testify? What's he going to do?
He dances around with his dick and his balls tucked between his legs, singing like a lady. He doesn't talk about anything serious, I don't think. You know?
Well, I don't think he thinks...
I
don't think he thinks his dominion is serious testimony.
I didn't say to Tucker when he was dancing his dance, hey, what are you going to do about your testament? Now, see, you don't want to spoil the mood. It's kind of like a belly dance, but... It's not. You don't eat, though, during that. I never have. Honestly, as perverse as I am, I left. It was too much for me. I was like,
Tucker's too much for a lot of people.
He's like, he's still dancing. Yeah. I don't know. Eventually, he's going to stop, and I don't want to see that. So I left. I went to the Red Roof.
Did you?
Yeah, I got roofied and, you know, woke up in a dumpster 17 miles away naked.
You still have your kidneys?
No.
Damn it.
That wasn't from then, though. Still a better time than Tucky dancing around. That's all I know.
I'm back to the Gruner.
I wondered why he bothered tucking at all. So, anyway.
So, yes. On tonight's show, we have a wine from Carlisle. That is a boutique producer, normally of Zin. They do some Syrahs, Petite Syrahs, whatnot. Do they do Syrah? I think they do.
Yeah.
I would have bought that.
No.
We don't know. Anyway, we're not that good of a show. But Carlisle is a Sonoma-based...
They have a Syrah.
There we go. A Sonoma-based Zin producer, similar to our Turley or Ridge. Or there's Limerick Lane, Martinelli. Easy. Throw out some other ones.
Easy, sir. It's my Turley, not yours.
Oh, God.
They're not your favorite. Easy.
This is one of their white wines, a Gruner Veltliner, which is Scott's favorite varietal that's white, but normally it's from Austria.
I love Gruner Veltliner.
177 cases produced.
Nothing.
30 some dollars a bottle.
Did you know Gruner Veltliner was produced domestically in the States? Had you heard of it before?
I wouldn't be surprised. They produce everything here.
But I get that, but I just hadn't heard of one yet.
Well, I mean, I didn't look for it, but I'm sure, yeah. This is a wine that you can't buy. Well, you can't buy it from, you know what? Every so often, Carlisle has an offering, and you can go on there. What is it? If you buy 6 bottles, it's $1 shipping for all 6. It's a good deal. Nobody has that deal. Turley doesn't have that deal. Nobody has that deal. $6 shipping for six bottles. Fuck, that's a cheap deal.
So,
and their stuff is it's sub 40. You can get, you know, $30-some a bottle for good stuff, and Zins and some white wines. We have something called the Derivative that we're going to be doing. That's a Semillon and Muscadel blend. Mm-hmm. So there's some very, very fun stuff, really low case production, and it's a dollar fucking shipping if you get six bottles.
Yeah. Now, so it's not all their offerings. They only have what they're going to sell.
True.
You can get on the mailing list. I'm guessing the mailing list isn't going to offer that dollar shipping, but who knows? Maybe they do. I did sign up for a mailing list.
But why
wouldn't
they?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But there is the value. So you say, Wine Vault, there should be some semblance of value in what you do on your show. I think we've kind of debunked that. We'll do whatever the fuck we feel like it.
Yeah.
But there is value there. So there you go.
It's not a cheap wine. You know, this is, I think this went for 30-something, 35 maybe, mm-hmm. which is expensive for a white wine for our taste too. But it's interesting.
It's
I love it.
Ultra low case production,
i.e., quality.
But that being said,
generally,
we've had the finest Grüner Veltliner producer in the world, Nigel, on the show a long time ago. That's in the Hall of Fame. Now, we've never been able to find Nigel again. Domaine Wachau, we also like them too.
I like them a lot, and they're a more budget producer, price point wise.
Yeah, below 20.
I think you can get it. I think it's a little more than that now.
Yeah.
21, 22. Got a couple of those in sitting.
Mm-hmm. Nigel is what you want to be looking for.
I get it, but and you know, maybe in the larger markets, you can find Nigel. But mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to.
I am too.
Let's stick our nose in this thing.
We will as soon as we get back, though, because Scott is being presumptuous. But nevertheless, we're going to take a break so Scott then can come back and stick his nose in that.
Stick your nose in it.
And do even more than that.
Stick your nose in it.
But not like Tucker. We're not going to do. No, Tucky. Tucky's not allowed on the show. I don't want to see anybody standing up and tucking themselves and dancing around. No. You know what also, Scott? When he did that, it was like a karaoke bar, which is weird because he wasn't singing. Well, he was. But behind him was like a TV, like a movie screen kind of thing. And he was showing an episode of Smurfs. I don't know why. It just was a lot for me, even me.
I bet it was.
Yeah, so Tucker Carlson, nude. Well, no, he had a shirt on. It was like a crop top shirt. It was weird. It was like, wow, and just what the fuck? Anyway, but naked from then down. But the crop top was like right below his boobs, but he doesn't have it. He's a man, I guess. Maybe not. I don't know. Because I saw what was below there, and then he would tuck it, which seemed kind of pointless to me, if you know what I mean. And then he was dancing around, singing Belinda Carlisle songs, which is weird.
Well,
but it was like her deep cuts. He knows her real stuff, not the commercial shit, you know? It's the crap you never heard of. And it was like after she actually was famous. I don't know. Anyway, and then he was showing episodes of the Smurfs behind him. I don't know. Weird night.
I'll bet it was.
I stayed there for 13 minutes. I timed it. That's all I needed.
How'd he get that screen up at the Tamarack?
It wasn't at the Tamarack, Scott.
You said it was at the Tamarack.
No, I said that he likes to meet people at the Tamarack and get the teaser, but that wasn't at the Tamarack.
Oh.
That was at a, you know, Roadhouse Steakhouse. It was weird. I don't know why.
Oh, Lord.
He's like, can I have that room? They're like, what? What do you have all this shit for? Why do you have a projector? Never mind. And they wondered why the Smurfs was playing it. I don't know. They never asked why he was. Well, they couldn't tell. Whatever. He shaves, too. It's weird. I don't know. He's shaved in a V, like his pubes. I was like, Tucker, men don't do that. But he didn't understand.
So, folks, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So, the Carlisle Sonoma County, Sonoma Mountain, which is an AVA within Sonoma.
Sub-AVA.
Yes. Yes. Grunewaldlinger, and it's their Steiner Vineyard. So it's a single vineyard, 2021. No reviews that we're aware of. And suggested retail, $33. Tasting notes, light golden yellow, clove-accented aromas of green apple, chamomile, and lime zest flow from the glass. Medium-bodied, flavors of apple, gooseberry, and a slight suggestion of vanilla dance across the palate. Rounder and texturally more alluring than previous versions, but no less age-worthy. Mm. They also have this on oak a little bit. They have stainless and oak.
It's partially aged in stainless, but new to this vintage.
Mm-hmm.
They also aged it in a traditional Austrian oval oak upright to add textural interest.
Well, on the nose.
I believe that's going to be similar to French aging in the larger format barrels.
Like a fooder?
Like a fooder.
Mm. And why, folks, they do things in fooders so you have less contact. You still get some of the mellowing, the smoothness from the oaking, but you don't get a lot of the oak flavors, which sometimes you want to avoid. You don't want to get that in this kind of nuanced white. Chardonnay, why not? Say fuck it. But not Grunewaldlinger, not Sauvignon Blanc, even though don't tell that to some of the California Napa producers. They think you want an oaked Sauvignon Blanc. I don't. They also think you want scurvy. I don't want that.
No.
They also think you want Tucker Carlson. I don't want that.
No, we don't.
I didn't want it either, so, you know. Tucky.
Yes, I'm sorry. His name is Tucky. On the nose, it smells like Grunewaldlinger.
Yeah, the lemon zest is prominent. Yeah.
But with Grunewaldlinger, you're going to get a little bit of a muddledness to it. So, menthol, but a cream menthol. It has creamed lemon curd, but it's not prickly.
No, I was the same way. I was lemon curd. Before
a vanilla lemon curd.
Read the tasting notes, stuck my nose in this, I'm thinking lemon curd. Yeah.
Grunewaldlinger should never be prickly. It should never be this wildly acidic wine. It should be clean, but it shouldn't be bracing or anything like that. It's akin to like Albariño from Spain, which is a wine I love. But, you know, that was before I really drank many Grunewaldlingers, and I was like, all right, fuck Albariño. But it should have a little bit of an oily mouthfeel. It's a mouthfeel white. That's one reason why Scott likes it.
Yes. The mouthfeel about it, there's just a texture about it, that this oiliness, this tongue coating nature, it can almost get you to dairy in a really fun way. Rob's going in. I'm just backing off. I'm just waiting.
You're gonna hate this.
He's lying, folks.
No, I am. That's a really, 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 really good fucking white wine. Wow. It takes Grunewaldlinger and then turns the amp up to 11 like you would do.
Oh my God.
That's real good wine.
The apple.
Sure.
They call it suggestion of vanilla. There's something else in there with the vanilla. Like,
if you closed your eyes, folks, and didn't know what was in the glass, and you weren't thinking straight, you'd think you're drinking a red wine. It has the power, the richness, the intensity, and a lot of the flavor profiles that, not like red fruits and shit, but the intensity that red wines have.
And they're calling this medium body. This is the biggest medium-bodied white wine I've ever had.
There's a lot going on there in your medium-bodied. I mean, okay, I'll go along with medium-bodied, but it is a rich bastard, decadent, while still being dry. It has elements of so many good wines. It has elements of good sherry, you know, in its richness. It's slightly nutty overtones as you let the finish goes on. By the way, the finish goes on for minutes, not minutes plural.
And there's a starkness. You know it's finished in stainless steel, but there's a starkness about the oak that's so unique. It's.
We had a brief pause there because, unfortunately. Obviously, as you know, Bo has passed away, and we have a very, very cheap replacement for Bo named George, which is a cat, and he's orange, and he's stupid. And he almost knocked over five bottles of empty bottles. We have a lot of empty bottles here in the wine vault, but George did his best to try to knock shit over for no apparent reason other than being stupid.
And was being careful to not knock the TV over.
For some reason he thought, I'll go up behind the TV that's on the wall that we never use, but it's on the wall. And for no apparent reason other than just to be stupid. And he meowed at me, looked at me like I was a dick.
Well, he knows you well.
Oh, that's right.
He's a good judge of character.
But this wine.
The finish has this stark oakiness about it that's just so unique.
But balanced.
Yeah.
I don't love oak in wines like this, but what they've done is they've used it to create a creamy silkiness. And then, yeah, you do have oakiness, but it's at the very finish. So it's almost set aside.
And it's what I mean by it stark. It's so different than other oaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's so subtle. It's just like this kiss of oak, but it's different. It's like, I can't compare it to anything else because I've just never had this light a touch of oak that's so open and so in your face, but yet at the same time, it's subtle. Soft oak? I don't even know how to phrase the descriptor for it.
Probably not that way, but that's fine. Soft oak.
What would you... What?
I would just say that it's off by itself. So
it is.
It doesn't touch anything. It's like people that can't have their foods touch on their plate. The oak is pushed off.
That's it. Like that. And I said stark, and by my use of the word stark, I meant it's sitting out there in the open, and Rob described it perfectly. It's off by itself. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take over the whole finish. It's just pops in there.
It's there to provide nuance and to say, hey, I'm oak. Scott, you had one of their Zinfandels over the weekend, correct?
Yes.
How'd you like that?
So,
I gave myself. I was in a
bit of a mood.
You're bitchy. Yeah, you're a little cunty. You know.
It felt young.
It's 2021. I mean, these wines are young.
And it's a 15%er, but it didn't seem over the top with the alcohol. Now, Princess, my wife, she loved it. And maybe it was just a bad wine night for me, but it just felt like it wasn't ready yet.
Yeah. Oh, I would think it's not. Yeah.
I wanted it to be ready because I wanted to say to you, you were going to do your bottle on the show, but that didn't. That's not what I'm going to suggest. And you know, off air we talked about this, and it's like set it back for 3 to 5 at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they suggested to like 20. They say everything's now, but that wine's not a now. Now, to be fair, of their offerings, it's the least expensive of their offerings.
What was it, 36?
Nine? I thought it was 36. 36, 39, whatever. Where much of their Zenon offerings are in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's a good Sonoma Zen. It just didn't blow me away. But my first impression, first taste to the last taste, it just wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. Just was young. And I think the telling point for me, just the acidity, it just was a little... not out of whack, like it was going to be bad, but just it needed to calm down. Mm-hmm. And what, we'd hit it for 2-3 weeks, maybe?
2 weeks, maybe. Max.
Maybe. So it had time to sit down a little bit from the shipping.
I mean, that's earlier than I would ever touch anything like that. But
I'm
more... I can be far more restrained in my... wine drinking habits.
Yeah, I wasn't restrained. I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to try that Zen. I just couldn't wait and was looking for an excuse. And
I'm hoarding onto my Kirkland Signature Bordeaux. I keep like, no, I don't want to drink that right now. I have 9 bottles of Kirkland Signature Bordeaux, and I keep drinking something different.
It's Kirkland Signature Bordeaux.
I know, and I keep not drinking it because I don't want
to
drink it.
Back to this.
I'm saving it.
Back to this.
I'll drink a bottle this week.
So
we like it, but
this Grüner.
By the way, folks, I personally think, and I think that you should write your congressman, your senator, whoever. I think that Grüner Veltliner should replace
Chardonnay,
Sauvignon Blanc.
Let's go easy. Chardonnay. I think you should replace Chardonnay.
Sauvignon Blanc.
You should replace Chardonnay.
And Sauvignon Blanc. Also, I think that we should do away with Riesling. And let's see what else should be done away with. Not Semillon. No. They don't grow that anyway. I think that's good. Yeah. Just replace that. I mean, folks, Grüner Veltliner is such an drank varietal, and it's criminal because this is one of the more interesting, delicious white wines that exists. I mean, it really does. Most of it's in Austria, sure, but if you find it, god damn it, you need to drink it. I mean, vet the producer. I don't want you to drink something that's shitty that you don't like, because I'm sure there are shitty Grüner Veltliners, right?
Are there?
Probably. But man, Domaine Wachau, Nigel, if you find little Grüner Veltliners from elite producers like a Carlisle or something like that, somebody local, damn it if you shouldn't buy it. This is the thing. If you see a $35 price tag on a Californian produced Grüner Veltliner that isn't by a Wagner family member, they made that wine because they cared. And it's going to be good. They're not fucking around. Normally, you're going to see wines like this pop up from places like a Carlisle. I'm surprised Turley doesn't do one. They do White Coat, but that's more... They're more Rhone than they are otherwise. And they're more Rhone-dominated than they are outside of that. So they do a Sauvignon Blanc now.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
They do a White Coat.
My wife's favorite white wine is Turley's Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, White Coat is their homage to White Châteauneuf. Okay. And now they have a Grenache, which they openly say is a homage to Châteauneuf. You didn't see that, did you? Yeah, Scott only bought 2 bottles, about 3. But this wine, if you see it out there, if you around some, if you know a local producer that makes this, you should do it. Beyond that, Petit Mansing is another great white that is underutilized, underappreciated. Great. Albarino, another great one. Underappreciated. You should buy it. Those are the three trinity of whites, in my opinion.
Underappreciated.
Wildly underappreciated.
I think of the three, the Albert... well, in the wine community, the wine professionals, I think they appreciate Grüner Veltliner. But the wine drinker ad hoc don't know about Grüner Veltliner. They probably know more about Albarino.
They probably know more about Anna Burino. They don't know anything about Petite Mansing, but Petite Mansing is good.
Yeah. You know, there's some producers in Ohio that grow Petite Mansing up around the northeast corner.
Okay.
No.
I know. I've had actually one out of North Carolina. It was really good.
Yeah.
It's pretty adaptable. It's a pretty bold grape. If you're in North Carolina, if you're like, I'm going to go on a winery tour in North Carolina. Okay. Punch yourself in the face. But after you punch yourself in the face, if they have Petite Mansing, drink that. Don't drink anything else. Drink that. Virginia.
I think they're growing in Virginia too. I was going to say
drink that. It's a very adaptable grape. It's oily. It has complexity. I love an oily white. It's body. It's richness.
Well, it adds that body. Mm-hmm. Even if it's truly not medium body, it gives you a sense of body, right?
Yep.
It just comes down to certain varietals are easy to create mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about, you know, creating a wine experience. And white wines typically aren't as complex as reds. That's not always the case.
It's not always the case.
But
the white wines we drink typically
are. When you can have a white wine that creates mouthfeel, mm-hmm. you're halfway home.
Oh, yeah.
If you give me a white wine with mouthfeel, I don't care if it's the most complex thing. I'm smiling. My eyes are dancing. This wine. Hello, son.
This wine is a hella good wine.
The woodiness about this, it's like, and it's not the oaky. There's like a, this is how I'm going to try to describe this. Toffee or brittle bark candy has like a woodsy component to it.
Okay.
Not in a this has that thing that toffee has, that woodiness about it, except it's not that sweet toffee thing. It's just that woody component of toffee that's there. And that's in the mid palate.
Well, I know what flavor you're talking about because I can taste it, but I never really thought of woodiness.
How would you, what, so
that or, mid-palate no, thing. I never thought of toffee. I mean, no, I get like, not a Clark Bar.
No, Clark Bar exactly has that.
Yeah, but the Clark
Barkiness thing to it.
Yeah, but no. What's the score? It starts with an S. Whatever it is, it's toffee and chocolate is basically what it is. And I do taste that through the mid palate. My grandparents always, what was it? Scorn? I don't know what it was called. They always bought that. And so,
what was the other brand of Clark Bar? There was Clark Bar, and there was another one. It was just Clark Bar
is almost like a peanut butter, but it's, you know, it's a little bit thinner and a little denser.
But it had that layered, crispy,
mm-hmm.
brittle barky thing.
Yeah. But the one I'm thinking of, I think it's a Score Bar. It's solid toffee, and that in what the hell is the toffee? Chocolate toffee.
Well, there was one called Toffifee, but that's different. That was hazelnut and toffee.
Doesn't matter. Straight toffee and chocolate. And they
Heath
always
Heath Bar, wasn't it?
Yeah, Heath Bar. This is a different version of a Heath Bar. But they always got that. And initially, as a little kid, I didn't like it because it wasn't, you know.
It wasn't straightforward.
Well, yeah. But you eat one. And then you remember, I had that at my grandma and grandpa's. I think I want to have that again.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you like it. And then eventually, it's something that's burnt into your memory. And you really like toffee and chocolate. It's weird how that works, you know?
But see, there's another. The version of it I'm talking about is called brittle bark or toffee bark. Mm-hmm. And it just has a woodsy component about it. And not the toffee, not the sweetness, but that woodsy component of it, that's what's in the mid palate here for me. And that's the best way I can describe it. It's so, I can't think of a comparison point for this texture in the midpoint of this wine, and this, and it has to be described as an earthy component, which has a hint. It's a hint of minerality, right? It's terroir driven.
You know, Scott, at Tucky's dance thing,
yeah,
he had some refreshments and had some of those bar that kind of stuff you're talking about, and I'm thinking, were you there? There was a man there that was wearing obviously a fake mustache, but he was kind of dressed stupid. And he was wearing an old jersey. So, I mean, it might have been you.
Sounds like the wine guy.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He's older.
Dressed kind of stupid. Well, the wine guy's getting up there now.
No, Rob got wine guy's
his,
young.
His children are aging him rapidly.
Well, that happens. That's true.
Wilfred. His son.
His son took a shit in the front. Yeah, I heard that.
Isn't that amazing?
Not really. Amazing is a
amazing.
Different...
Amazing if you want to age your father.
Well, it's, you know, especially when the dad has to pick up a turds in a Kroger bag, like the child's a dog. It's really ridiculous. And he had two big turds, but there's one little one that he had like reach, and you can still feel the warmth. So it's like I'm the wine guy. I don't know why that. Anyway. I have the same experience.
It does sound like you're the wine guy.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, so you shared those experiences with your children, Wilfred?
I don't have children, Scott. Well, yeah. I don't want to talk about it. It happened on Red Roof. It always happens at a... Actually, this is La Quinta Inn. It's an ethnic inn, apparently.
La Quinta means beside Chi-Chi's.
And there are no more Chi-Chi's.
There aren't any more La Quinta Inns either.
La Quinta is Spanish for beside a Chi-Chi's, which is racist, but it's still funny. That's okay.
No, literally.
It was.
In Columbus, every Chi-Chi's had a La Quinta Inn beside it.
It did. I remember one time a buddy of mine and I were going to pick up his sisters, which were also in my grade, you know. We were picking them up at that La Quinta Inn, and I never, to this day, realized why the fuck were they at the La Quinta Inn. And they were like honor society and shit like that. But we went and picked them up, and I'm thinking,
apparently they were studying.
I never occurred to me. Now I would say, why the fuck are they at the?
But actually, La Quinta Inns for the time frame were kind of an upscale. Had a kitchen, kind of,
yeah,
like a residence, Scott, inn of Marriott.
They would have been like 15-year-olds at the time.
I'm sure they were studying at the La Quinta Inn.
15-year-old girls have no business at a La Quinta Inn.
That's my point.
Yeah, I'm just saying. And sisters, too. And they're twins. It's just... I'll just take a drink and I'll be fine, but still. I don't have to worry about that with my daughter. She thinks that ketchup is lotion that you rub on your face. So, it's fine.
Well, more to the point, you don't have to worry about that with your daughter because La Quinta Inns are out of business. So.
That's as they should be. But it was funny. Some other mother, their daughter was trying to play with Maggie, my daughter. And Maggie escorted the market on being a... What's the word?
You started with a B.
And it rhymes with itch. And that's what she is. But still, as she is. I mean, we all know what she is. And she knows what she is. And she's very proud of it.
She likes me. She wanted to play soccer with me.
She likes everybody, but she's just mean. But still, she, the woman's daughter goes, Maggie is rude. And she's like, don't talk about that. She's only 18 months old. That's mean that you don't say that. So, but she had called Becky to apologize about what her daughter said to her. I don't know why the hell she's calling Becky to tell Becky that she's sorry that her daughter privately told her that Maggie was rude.
Because she plainly wanted to counsel Becky on your
Becky
daughter.
Goes, no, that's okay. Maggie is rude. She's rude. And she's... Well, she's a bitch, but she has to be because she has three older brothers that she has to fight against to survive.
Except that's not exactly true.
No, she's a complete diva.
No, they walk around pins and needles around her.
Oh, Luke, he's terrified of her. Mr. Front Yard Defecator is terrified of her. So, you know. But still, folks, we need to take a break because then we need to come back.
Well, we need to compose ourselves.
Yeah, no, then we need to do
something. Hey, come back over here. Think you're doing there?
It's all that's left in the bottle, Scott.
No, there's not. Keep going. You bet.
I'm sorry.
We're literally arguing over who gets the last. Hey!
It's even. Scott grabs the bottle. He dumps half it on the table. Oh, he's going. And then he squeegees it off with his hand that the cat pissed on. Oh, he licked the table. That's gross, man. Oh man, that's gross. Anyway, folks, this show's lost all decorum, and we're gonna take a break. But be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So in tonight's potpourri, we have a very technical potpourri.
Very technical.
We're going to make dick jokes. No, we're not going to do that. Actually, no, Scott. What we're going to do is, I want to go through the scoring range from 85 to 93. All right?
Then, Robert, when we do the enhancement, we insert a titanium rod that extends the length more than 2 inches, which would double your length. You should be very happy with the outcome of the surgery.
Yeah, Scott's very mature. See, he wrote that. Anyway, and then I want us to give kind of a synopsis. If we're going to give an 85, what our impression of the wine is, and vice versa. 87, 89. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying?
We've always... Rob's called it the Olympic scale.
It is the Olympic scale.
Perfect being 100.
We've never had that. It's not possible.
I'm sure it's possible.
Oh, it's possible.
But the ones we do on the show, there have only been a couple candidates for that, right?
Yeah, the closest thing. Well,
The hardest thing with the score to you know, if you're going to talk about our criteria, normally you would start from the low end and go up to the high end. Well, the low end's harder to... Hey. He's trying to steal back the wine. The low end's the hardest to... He's taking the empty bottle. And yeah.
I got a good pull off that essence.
There's an early picture of us in the wine vault with you dumping a bottle back like
that. That's right. That. And it happens.
But the lower end of the scale is the harder to say.
Well,
what gets you a 70? What gets you a 75? What's the difference between a 70, 75, and 80?
There isn't. Oh, 70.
There's so much subjectivity when you're dealing with, per se, bad wines. And realistically.
Between a 78 and a 72. It's a disgusting factor, but I really don't think about it too much. When you get into those low scores, it's more of a gut. If I want to say this wine is trash, I mean, there are wines that are so objectively trash that they get put in the 60s.
They just don't deserve to even be scored.
Well, I mean, and those things, man, they're just manipulated to the point where they're not even drinkable. Something is a 78, for instance. That's a bad wine. That is a bad, bad, bad wine. However, what I would normally say with the 78 is they thought they were trying. They just really are bad at what they do. Or they really just, they know what they can do. They just didn't give a shit on that particular day.
And sometimes we get a little prissy about this. You know, it's a producer that we expect more out of, but it was, they made a bad effort. But typically for a wine to be in the 70s, there are flaws in the wine.
You don't, you run from those kind of wines.
It's going to have characteristics that are unwarranted. You know, a green pepper nose,
there's no
bad oaking.
There's no redeeming characteristics that make you want to consume it. Quite frankly, it's probably bad for your health.
But realistically, once you're into the 80s, even a low 80 wine, for most people, is palatable and you can drink it.
But why?
And even you know, you might have wines that are cheap-ass wines, say in the $5, $6 range, that we might give them an 82 and 83. And actually, considering it's a $5 or $6 wine, that's probably not, it's consumable. It's not bad. It is what it is.
We don't have many $5 or $6 bottles of wine anymore on this show, unfortunately.
We don't do that.
And so score does come into a kind of come into context when you're talking about lower 80s. 70s, I don't give a shit how much it costs.
It's a bad bottle of wine.
So 85. 85 is the bare minimum. It tastes like the varietal is supposed to taste. And that's about it. It's not all that interesting. It doesn't have any flaws where it doesn't have residual sugar issues or purple death or the green pepper isn't coming to consume it. Or it just is. It tastes like a Cabernet, for instance.
It's a good wine.
It's a solid wine. It's not something that you would ever, you're not going to remember it a day after you drank it. And if it were full price, you'd never touch it.
Now, on the other hand,
you might buy it on discount, but probably
not. So it could be a wine that has some good features, but let's say it's not true to its varietal. So you would knock it down a couple points, but it might have some attributes that would bring it back up to that 85. So everything's really kind of got a relative nature about it. Why, you know, so to some degree, the way we do things, we don't really base things on an 80 score. We kind of base it on an 85. And it's not that you're going to start there, but we've got an expectation for a wine that if we're going to say it's good,
yeah,
that it's going to be true to its varietal.
85 is the
85's floor. Kind of the baseline. Mm-hmm. And I think to some degree where we got that idea from was kind of Parker.
Yeah.
To some degree. The Robert Parker has written a couple different pieces on how he scores wine and the idea of the 100-point scale. And some people might argue that he's really the birth of the 100-point scale. You know, I'm sure somewhere in France are going, oh, you Americans, you know, but
you got to judge things in some fashion. And I mean, not everybody has like the you know, San Antonio River Walk wine or the Rodeo Wine Festival.
The Rodeo Wine Festival.
Yeah, I mean, nobody has that, so I can't give a gold medal to that. And not everybody competes there, so.
Morrow County Willow Creek Walk Wine Festival.
The Buckeye Lake Child Pornography Wine Festival. Yellowtail was there.
The Austin, Texas State Penitentiary Cafeteria Wine Festival.
The Texarkana Tucky Wine Festival. It's fantastic. You know, I don't want to talk about what they had there, but let's just say it involved the Smurfs. Why did he dye everything blue? I was like, Tucker, nobody wants to drink blue wine. And you know what he said?
What did he say?
Nothing. He had a ball gag in his mouth. You know,
I thought you left after 13 seconds.
This was a different time.
Oh.
It's almost like a tour. I don't know why I go. I always think
of, well, you know why you go.
No, I don't know why I go.
No, Wilfred.
I always leave early. I don't know what actually happens.
That's...
They might like read to children and donate food to charity, as far as I know, after that. But, you know.
This is an upstanding organization.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. I just said I'm giving them what's called the benefit of the doubt. I doubt.
Thomas.
I think there's a lot of things that go on after that, and it's all on the dark web, but still, you know. Hey, who am I to judge?
An 86, moving on to that. It's basically an 85. It's cheap enough you would buy it again, but, it's...
You have to have a reason to get off that 85.
You do, but it's a lot easier to get to 86 than an 87. An 87 comes into where there's some enjoyment in the wine. It might be a little bit light, it might be... somewhat boring, but it is an interesting wine in some respects. It has body, perhaps, but it doesn't have length. It has length, but it doesn't have body. It has some sort of shortcoming that holds it back from really going forth, but, you know, it works as a wine. It works as a wine. Normally, it's a cheaper wine. The wines that we start to like are 88.
Yeah. 87 to 88.
Those wines, I would like to say, are more like Thanksgiving dinner. Say a California Cabernet, for instance. That means something. It tastes like cab. It does everything that's nice. It has a good mouthfeel. It has good tannin. It just isn't wildly complex.
Yeah, Thanksgiving dinner is a great reference point. Mm-hmm. We all love Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
But when was the last time you had a Thanksgiving dinner and went, oh my God, that was the best meal I've ever had in my life?
Never.
Because it's roasted turkey.
Yeah, you take your pants off, but...
And gravy and...
stuffing.
Stuffing.
Stuffing's just bread and shit, you know?
You're always, in the back of your mind, you're worried about food poisoning because it's turkey, and...
I don't know where you go, but, you know...
No, because... people leave the bird out a little long, and you want that sandwich at the end of the night, and you take it home, and oh, you forgot it in the car. You didn't put it in the refrigerator right away.
I know some people that undercook ham and give everybody salmonella poisoning.
Well, I don't know that it was salmonella poisoning, but...
Their names rhyme with...
Easy.
Hey, boy.
Easy.
That ham was well-cooked, boy. It was just raw by the bone. And every place else, boat.
No,
but I'm an expert chef, boat. I kill people with ham, for Christ's sake.
Botulism.
I'm going to make ribs in a bag. Eat them.
But the 87, 88 point is it's Thanksgiving dinner. You executed it well, and it's just there's a certain point where that's as good as you can get. And I'm not saying that every wine that's 87, 88, that's as good as it can get. It's just... that's what it is. You know, it was, the gravy was great. The mashed potatoes were whipped well. And this year, Mom put heavy cream in it. So it was really
But there wonderful. Was no sage in that gravy. No sage.
Sage goes in the turkey, not so the gravy.
You ever had sage-laced gravy?
If it was from the turkey, but sage and gravy, it's going to overpower the gravy,
honey,
sir.
Honey, John, you just don't know what
you're doing. No, that's going to overpower the gravy.
Okay.
You want to do something special in turkey gravy? Do giblets. And you cook the giblets in the sage, but then you remove the sage, sir.
I know.
Easy. It's not sage in the gravy. It's just sage influence ingredients, sir.
You know what's good? Then 89. 89 are wonderfully done wines. However, they have the complexity. They lack a little bit of the power. They have the power. They lack the complexity. It's just a scaled up 89, really, or 88 is really what it is.
And it really lends itself to what 90 is. 90 is where we say this is great.
Yes.
Complete arbitrariness.
Not nice. Great. 91, really great. To
another level. But... so doubling back to the 89, it's just, you just can't quite call it great. There's just something, it's just not quite there. And this is where we mince words quite a bit. The wine guy and I, if you've listened to the show for a long time, it's just not unusual for Rob to say, and I'm also at a whatever the number I said. Mm-hmm. We just, first of all, we have similar palates. We try to evaluate things logically and with merit, and we also try to listen to each other as we talk about the wine and be professional about our reviews. The numbers we apply to these wines, we take really seriously. We don't take much else seriously about this show. Dick jokes, Rob drawing pictures, Wilfred wrong.
What about the teaser?
The teaser.
It's the ring finger, Scott. But of the right hand, so, you know.
Not the left hand?
No, you can barely even move that finger.
You did your left, that finger amputated on your left hand, didn't you?
I used the teaser too many, you know, you get diseases if you don't wash your hands after you do the teaser too many times.
They had to amputate.
I should have done that at Guatemala, that's all I know.
This is just another reason that we need national health care, even for folks like Wilfred Wrong.
Yeah, but I was at a clinic, and I was.
No, I'm sure you were at a clinic.
I was there as a volunteer. I don't think that they liked me very much after the fact. Some people did. I had a following.
You had a following?
No, kind of, yeah. There's two guys.
Two guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to sound racist, but, you know, they liked me.
Why would that be racist that they liked you?
There was a second part to what I was going to say, and I didn't say it, so that's the racist part, probably.
So you're learning...
What? Don't overanalyze it, Scott.
Okay.
We'll get demonetized.
No, that's a real concern for us.
It is. It's hard to be this drunk and this coherent. It's a skill, really. You took more of that wine, you cocksucker. Anyway, so.
No, you drank more of your wine, so you've got less in the glass than I do. But 90, 91, and then you get to the level of 95 and above.
Well, no, you missed 92, 93. I didn't talk about those. 92, 93 are things that we've ordered while we're on the show from our phones. So those are wines that we have to have. I mean, they're just delicious. Anything beyond that, you're talking about classic wines that normally are not off the shelf. They have been aged, curated, and specifically set back because they are great wines. You're not going to see something really off the shelf that gets a 94 and 95. It's just, I don't think it's
around. You see the scores.
Well, the boy got that. But that's
the boy got 96, 97, 98.
From us.
We didn't score it that high.
No, we, but it's good. And so I'm talking about from you and I off the shelf, straight off new release.
Not aged, yeah.
Those wines don't get those scores.
Well, and it's also, we're just not in a position to get those wines in our possession where we're not going to treat them properly. A wine that is that score.
Oh, you can't.
You
it's
don't
not right.
drink it now.
No, it's not right. No.
You don't drink it now. We're not in a position. People aren't giving us wine to try. Yeah, allegedly it was wine. No, it was wine. No, we're buying our own wine.
We've said no thank you.
we're not going to buy a wine that's potentially that high a score and not age it properly. And Rob made reference to the boy, and it was spectacular, but it probably should have been aged before we drank it. I'm not sure why you decided to do that. It was... And maybe it was just because it was that high a score, but it was like $50 still at the time. So, people spent a lot more for a bottle of wine than that, but I can't remember. I guess probably between the two of us, we've got some Chateauneuf du Pape's.
Yeah.
That are that price range, that high a score.
We, by the way, also have...
But we're not drinking those right now.
Well, we have a... You're going to hate this. We have a 1999 Domaine du Pigalle to deal with. We have a 2001 Domaine du Donjon to deal with. Yeah. I don't know when we'll do the 99 Pigalle, but we will do the 99 Pigalle.
What he means is to deal with. He means we're going to do them on the show.
Yeah. At least one of the two. Maybe I'll just drink them by myself. I don't know.
He's such a guy.
The 98 Pigalle currently holds the highest scores that we've had, but my favorite wine on the show has been the Ponet Canet. So, folks, we're going to take a break, but when we get back, we're going to review the Gruner Veltlinger from Carlisle. Here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, the 2021 Carlisle Cinnamon Mountain Gruner Veltlinger from there.
Cinnamon Mountain?
I said Sonoma Mountain.
It's a little slurry.
It might be slurry, but that's because I've been drinking. And it's their Steiner Vineyard.
Oh, to live on
Sonoma Mountain.
Sonoma Mountain.
You know, Kenwood. You know, they're Jack London Zim, or Jack London Zin and Cab come from Sonoma Mountain.
The Jack London?
Jack London. I don't know if they still make Jack London. I don't think they do actually make that anymore. They make the Three Valleys or whatever. But Jack London was a great wine. It wasn't, but
no, it was spent. That bottle was that we had a problem. I think that bottle was just a bad bottle. I think
remember
it
how
was spent.
They talked about Jack London wanting to fuck a horse in that story.
I thought it was a dog.
It was a horse. And a dog. He wouldn't fuck
a horse.
A horse
is a horse.
He'd fuck a horse, but.
What? No. How?
Upon that man. Or no. Upon that horse was a. No. How did that go? Upon that man was a beautiful horse. I don't know what it was. That's weird.
No, you're weird. How would a man fuck a horse?
I don't know. Have you been to Tijuana recently? I know you have.
No.
Yes, Scott. Go to Tijuana. You'll find out why a man would fuck a horse.
Horses are much taller than men. They couldn't.
It's called a stepladder, dumbass.
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure in Nebraska you find a man a fucking horse. The same.
Tucker Carlson.
Well, yeah.
Tucky. He does a donkey show. Yeah, it's a miniature donkey.
Did want to summarize.
I looked at that as child molestation because it's a young donkey.
You would know.
Did he know how old that donkey was? I was like, Tucky. Do you know how old that donkey is or you're fucking? Wait a minute. Is that? Oh, I did stay longer than 13 minutes one time. I stayed there for 6 hours that one time.
Oh, Lord.
Good God. I don't want to talk about everything else. But
back
was
to the scores.
It was a young donkey.
Underaged?
Yes.
You're a bad man.
By the way, is a cardinal a protected bird in the state of Ohio?
Yes, it is.
Well, Tucky fucked one of them, too.
Jesus.
I know.
Wilfred.
Jesus Christ, yeah. It's horrible.
Back to the wine
story.
Red
feathers flying everywhere. And then he found out that was the male bird, and he couldn't stand it because he thought that made him gay. I fucked a male cardinal, he said, and I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, I thought it was a girl cardinal. And I was like, well, that makes you gay, Tucky. Oh, he just had a hard time with that. Yeah.
Wilfred wrong, folks. To summarize our...
You wrote all that, by the way.
Yeah, sure I did. To summarize the scoring, we didn't get to 95. When we get to 95, that's a superior wine. Somewhere off in the distance, the wine guy is verklempt. He's slapping so hard he can't speak. Which part of our listening audience is going, it's about fucking time.
Some of the things you write are just hilarious.
Jesus.
Hey, he fucked a bird. He fucked a dude bird, made him gay. I don't know. Hey, man, that's what the life you lead. I don't know what to say.
Oh, Lord.
You know. If it quacks, it's a duck. I don't know.
Gruner Veltliner.
Yes, yes, yes. And your full glass. What's your score, dickhead?
Vanilla. Green apple. The nose.
Mm-hmm.
The lemon curd. Green apple. I think the tasting notes, they talked about chamomile. There was a little florally thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not a traditional florally thing. I'm a chamomile tea fan. I didn't get chamomile on the nose, but there was some type of grassy thing that I wouldn't have called chamomile. I'd call it grassy more than anything. There was a grassy note on the nose. In the glass, beautiful golden color, still beyond medium body. This is
medium plus.
In a non-fortified, a non-dessert style wine, this is the fullest bodied white wine I've ever had in my life.
Turley wants to talk to you after the show.
Well, I'm sorry. That's where I'm at with this. The mouthfeel, fucking spectacular. It's between oily and buttery without the dairy flavor about it. Sometimes when you get that dairy texture, there's a buttery note about it. It just feels more fluffy than oily. It feels more buttery, more dairy-like than oily, but it's that heavy. The finish, long. The oak, where Rob called it, it's kind of set aside, where it just, there's just this oak that just, it's by itself in the middle of the finish, and then the finish just continues to go. Fantastic.
What's your score?
92 of my points.
92.
I was between a 92 and a 91.
Well, I'm at a 91.
That's where I was at. But mm-hmm. I'm 92. I love this wine. Carlisle, fucking home run. Goddamn grand slam. You're down 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth. You fucking knock it out of the park.
Well, it doesn't cost a lot. I mean, it costs in the 30s, which isn't that bad for a premium wine with 177 cases made. I mean, good God, that's nothing. It's a lovely drink. It's a wonderful representation of a varietal that's not commonly made in California. Well, let me finish.
Everybody that's drinking goddamn $60 and $70 Chardonnay need to drink this. I'm getting angry at people right now because there's people that spend a lot of money to drink white wine. They should be drinking this.
Some of the Chardonnays are very, very good.
Okay.
But they should incorporate this and see if they like this, because this is a wonderful wine. The thing is about Chardonnay, you're talking about butteriness. You're talking about, I mean, that's what they're going for. You're talking about buttery Chardonnays. That's fine. This isn't that. This is a completely different varietal and approach than that. But if you like white wines, Gruner Veltliner is a must drink.
Oh,
I mean, Albarino is a must drink. Petit Mansing is a must drink. These are must drink whites, because you're missing out on really where good white wine is. I mean, not to say, I mean, I like Chardonnay. I do. There's many Chardonnays I've drank that I love. I'm bored with Sauvignon Blanc. I'm not going to lie. I am. I'm not saying it's bad. It's not. That's not fair. I've got several highly rated Sauvignon Blancs in my cellar that I never get around drinking.
But that's the Sauvignon Blanc I'm going to drink now. I'm not going to just drink Sauvignon Blanc to drink it. I'm only going to buy premium Sauvignon Blancs that I really like.
Yeah, I know.
Then I know what they are.
I have Cloudy Bay and Gamble in there. I never touched them. I mean, Cloudy Bay is the creme de la creme of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. It's debatable, but it is. I mean, yeah. It's better than Love Block.
Oh, I don't know about that.
That's what all the experts say.
That's what they say.
And it's been around longer.
I agree that it's been around longer, yeah. But what do we like better?
Well, we'll find out. We'll have it on the show.
We like Love Block better. I've had Cloudy Bay.
I know. I have too.
We did it at the wine dinner. Excuse me, at the dinner back at Newport, mm-hmm. where we put on, and that's the Sauvignon Blanc I bought, and they liked it. It was good.
Well,
but in myself, when I drank it, I went, I'd rather have a Love Block.
But even Love Block, it doesn't change your world.
No.
I've had Love Block many times. I don't remember it. I remember Turley. I don't remember Love Block.
Yeah, Turley's was fantastic.
So, a 92 and 91. Highly recommended. Tip of the cap to Carlisle for their first thing we've ever done. I'm excited to drink the derivative. We'll drink that in the next couple weeks. And, you know, nevertheless, though, for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott Lee, licensed taxi driver, we're going to bid you adieu, but see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.